From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
Welcome to Defrag Tools. And Andrew, what is on tap for today?
We're continuing the series we've been doing with Chad and me, with you being the studio audience.
Yeah.
Looking at exception codes that have been coming in on telemetry. And last week we did XML.
Yeah.
And we did HTTP before that, a couple weeks ago. And then before that we did background tasks, which is a slightly different thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to do today, we're going to continue that. So how am I deciding what to do here? Well, what I did, don't trust these numbers, but because the way I got them was not really accurate. But
yeah.
Roughly what we have is the proportion of exception types. As I said, don't really trust the numbers. They could definitely be bigger or smaller.
All right, and some of these we covered on the show already.
Yeah, I actually colored them red. So we did XML last week, which was this one. And then a couple weeks ago, we did these system web exceptions, or things to do with networking.
Yep.
The SDK example we used that week had Windows .NET namespace, where you actually get a system.exception exception from this namespace.
Okay.
And actually, we're going to talk about that a little bit today, how some exception types actually turn up as system.exception, even though they're more specific than that. Yeah, there's a fair few here. Now, this list actually went on for pages and pages and pages from the sampling set I randomly got. But the big ones are here in the middle.
So tell me a little bit about some of these. What would cause these?
Well, we'll start with the big one at the bottom, right? No reference, right?
Yeah.
It's just people not being careful. It's making assumptions that, well, it's not really going to be things like memory allocations. It's things that you call into a function and you just assume it's going to give you an object back.
Yeah.
Right? And a really classic example is you expect a collection to come back and then you do a for each over that collection. Well, the collection's null, so you can't do a for each over it and then boom, you've got a null reference exception. You know, equally, you might be asking, retrieve this string from this XML block, and if the XML doesn't got the string, it's going to come back as null, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just sloppy coding from that. As you can see, if you trust these bars, it's quite high. So it's one of those things that you need to be a little bit more pessimistic just generically about.
Mm-hmm.
The system.exception one is kind of the catch-all for everything. Everything can be, because it's a hierarchy of exceptions, everything can come down to system.exception. And we actually see today that even though it's exceptions is of a type, it actually gets reported as system.exception anyway. And that's kind of an artifact of the projection layer and the way that Windows RT runs. Oh, this is the Windows RT graph, not ecosystem.
Yep.
Interrupt is what we're going to do today. I'll get back to that in a sec. Invalid operation, that's a function that just said, you know what you're asking is not valid at this time. It's an explicit code that someone in their code's gone, yeah, I don't like the parameters that you're passing me. I'm going to return this exception, trying to tell you that it's not the right time to do this. Kind of familiar to that is unauthorized access exception. Probably not as much as the developer making the decision, but more the OS.
Mm-hmm.
So you're assuming that you have access to a file that you don't. And you can have screw-ups that we don't know how they happen, but things like, let's say that your package gets slightly damaged, right? And the deployment of your package files, say your JPEGs and your text files or JSON files that you have on the hard drive, let's say that somehow they got damaged.
Yeah.
I don't know why, bad sector on the hard drive, whatever. But things like unauthorized access exception are going to be manifestations of that. And so you got to be careful of that. I mean, that's obviously edge case. More general case is making a web call and just not having the access to make the web call.
Yeah.
Right? So unexpected security on it. The two socket ones are kind of associated with that. Straight web exceptions, 404, site not found, DNS error, all that type of stuff. Webs at the obviously at the HTTP level. Socket will be more at the pure TCP IP level.
Yeah.
Probably more of name resolution and bad IP addresses and stuff like that. Argument out of range. That's a out of bounds. Infinite loop that went too far type thing. Argument null, so that's kind of close to the null reference exception.
Yeah.
Where you say, well, you gave me a null in, I expected you to give me something. So it's kind of like, instead of crashing on the null reference exception, you go, you're an idiot, and say, you shouldn't have given me another argument.
Yeah.
That's common where you'll have a function that you have, you know, parameters for, and then you put a function within that just to pass the value into the internal. Mm-hmm. You never put it into a local variable, check that it was null, and then optionally called the function.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a more of a not sloppy coding, but a lazy coding manifestation. Finite found, kind of like access denied. You know, you expected something to be on the hard drive. You know, packages can get damaged for various reasons. So that's something you can hit. Finite found purely from a, I expect the file to be in my isolated storage or something, or if you have access to your document files, mm-hmm. rarity of that, but you know, file not there, what you expect. Of course, file not found is used more generically than that. It's an anti-status code that usually drives it. So it could be registry key not found and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So file not found is more, as I said, it's more generic than just files. And you can think of files as being name pipes and stuff like that too. So
yeah.
Argument exception, that's kind of like the argument null, where you might say, well, you pass me a string, it's got to have at least one character in it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't null, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't textual either. And then not implemented. Now, I'm surprised to see this one, because quite frankly, if you're writing code and leaving all these blocks in it that say not implemented exception on purpose,
yeah.
If you know that you're writing code like that, I would have thought you would have been more pessimistic
yeah.
in calling those functions. And I'm wondering how much testing you really did.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of a...
At least do a search and try to find that kind of stuff first.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. That's a really good point. I mean, go through all your code, find all these points, work out who calls them, and make sure they're all safe.
Yeah.
Because you're killing yourself.
So what makes an application interrupt app?
That's a good question. So Windows... RT, Windows Runtime, is based on the old COM code base, mm-hmm. right? And it's actually why it's called RO something. So COM used to be CO and then all these function names, and then internal to Windows Runtime is, they call it RO, so Runtime Object, blah. And so it's the COM nature of it, and the interop is the key word, and also COM exception at the end, kind of gives it, shows that relationship. Everything is done through interface pointers, like true C++ interface pointers. And what we do is we do a lot of marshalling and stuff between languages. And so if you want C# to talk to C++, for example, or your JavaScript to talk to C# or any combination, well, you have to project through the layers. And the way that it's done is we have interface pointers, which is a kind of like it's a class, but without memory is backing it. It's like it's a standard, and we pass those around, and then they can be across process, they can be within process, but they're across a boundary, and that's what the interrupt means. It's interoperability between things, and so the COM exception happens when you make a call over here, and all you have is this little pointer that. Under the covers, Microsoft turns this call into an RPC call, which actually is treated as an LPC call, which is a local procedure call rather than a remote procedure call. And then it packs all the memory and then talks to the person over there and comes back. Well, if that RPC channel dies, you get an exception, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes across the boundary, it also generics the whole idea. And so that boundary has to be at the COM level. Well, COM doesn't know what an exception is in C#. It doesn't know what a JSE exception is, a JavaScript mm-hmm. exception is. And so it comes back as an H result. And so it's kind of like a simplification of the interface.
And what is an H result?
That's actually a good question. So an H result is Microsoft's attempt to standardized error codes. Actually, I should be able to find a good web page on that, I reckon. So here we go. So an H result is a 32-bit number. So in the debugger, it's a DD, display D words. And it has these segments. So the bottom, whatever it is, 16 bytes. Bits, is the error code. And that's things like access denied is 5,
mm-hmm.
right? the facility is to do with who originated it. And so it could be like XML, it could be HTTP, stuff like that. So it's kind of like the area of the code base. So everybody gets a block of codes, and then it's associated with where do those codes get defined, right? And then the top five bits are kind of the important ones. Severity is the important one. The top bit, bit S in this chart, is what makes it an error or not. If the bit's turned on, you'll end up with an 8 on the front of the 8 result.
Yeah.
Right? And if it's turned off, then you won't. It's considered to be an error if the top bit is set. So there's macros in SQL, succeeded and failed, and all they do is look at the top bit. And it's actually an error code called S underscore false. So S is what we use as a prefix for successful codes, and we use E underscore for error codes. Mm-hmm. Normally you'd have S underscore okay, and then the facility is zero, and the code is zero, and so actually the value of the H result is zero. But there's actually S false, which is a success, but we didn't achieve the goal. And that value is one, and so error code's one, and the top S bit is zero, so it gets 00001. And so if you check the error code, go, does it equal zero, you will treat it as an error even though it was a success. And so you need to actually, in MSDN, be really careful when you're looking at hResult classes and read the return value statement, because it will tell you whether it only returns SOK or other types of S variants, right? But in essence, you should check the top bit rather than checking the code is equal to zero. Now, what you can do is you can get a critical, which is this reserve bit. So when Microsoft turns an NT status code into an H result, this is actually the Microsoft reserve bit. It says when this bit is set to one, Microsoft made the code and it based it on an NT status code. Mm-hmm. And because that bit's set, you end up with the number 8 bit set and the 4 bit set, which means 8 plus 4 is C in hex, and that's how you get a C blah 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 error code, mm-hmm. right? And so whenever it's a C on the front, you know it's from an NT status code, roughly it came from the operating system.
Yeah.
And when it's got an 8 on the front, it came from more like an API type level. And so that's really a very C concept, and that's actually what this com interrupt thing comes down to. The interrupt exception regularly happens when a C piece of code fires an H result, and because it doesn't fire an exception or anything, it just throws an H result, just purely a number, and then it arrives in C sharp. Well, it has to bundle it into something, and so it puts it into a com interrupt exception, or interrupt services com exception, and the number is this. There is bits in here too. There actually is, I'm not sure where it is, this isn't a good page, but one of these 987s is whether it's third party or Microsoft or not. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to make your own custom numbers, you should be setting those appropriately. So let's have a look at some code. So before I jump in here, I'll show you where I got the code from. So once again, we're using the Windows 8.1 application samples, which are available. They'll be on the link up or down, wherever it is, up here. And this week, I was trying to find a very common one, and I actually did a search for the code base, and there's actually no code that actually captures a com exception in the SDK. So I had to find something that was kind of close to it, so I could kind of add it, right?
Yeah.
So I found this cool XAML surface image DirectX example. So the web page is a XAML coded page with C sharp as its backing language. And then because it's a DirectX thing and you want some speed and everything, it interrupts to another component within the package, which is written in C++, and that does all the DirectX work, mm-hmm. right? So it's called the XAML surface image source DirectX interrupt example. So there was actually about four I could have chosen. I thought this one's kind of cool. So let's just run this thing before we look at the code and see what it does. There's two examples in this case. A lot of these samples tend to have a drop down where you can see different code paths.
Yeah.
This Direct2D one, you click it and it fills up these two spaces with squares and with some clipping involved. And we're actually going to play with this Direct3D one, and we have a nice rotational.
Very nice.
very smooth, you know, GPU acceleration, very cool DirectX thing. So how's this work? So this example has, the, as I said, the 3D and the 2D rendering objects. The scenario one is the 2D one, and the scenario one is the 2D one, scenario two is the 3D one. And then here we have our code for the actual web page, or the not web page, the store app, yeah. Main page. And so look at the, so the XAML is pretty simple. It's got a nice grid, the text at the top is describing everything, and then here's our button, and then here's the place, the images where we're going to draw the graphics. Mm-hmm. And then we're looking at the code. The code's relatively simple. It instantiates an instance of that C++ call. So this is an interop invocation. So this happens to be in proc, but it could have actually been out of proc. It could have been actually in a separate executable. So if for your old com guys, this is like a DCOM call, distributed com call, yeah. Out of proc call. And that's actually one of the really common reasons. I was trying to actually find this as an example. It's a common reason for it to die is if it's a separate executable and you just go kill that other executable, mm-hmm. Well, the link to it dies, right? And then you'll get a like an RPC something error, which whatever that error code turns into a COM error code, and then you can see that's like it's like RPC not connected or something, or whatever they call it, disconnected or something. So anyway, so we have a local variable of the C++ class in the C# class, and then initialization stuff makes the here's the actual allocation of everything, and then navigating to and from. When we navigate from, we just toggle the whether we should be rendering or not. So when we tap away, we stop rendering in the background. Yeah. Safe compute. But here's the button being turned on and off, and then here's the actual work that does the animation of the object. So the XAML actually is invoking this code and saying, I need you to make a frame at this point in time, and then this is the code that's deciding to begin the drawing, clear the thing, render the frame, which also in this, for the case of the 3D, would increment the twist.
Yeah.
Or the camera angle specifically, and then we end the draw. And so this code here is the interop call. So each one of these four functions is a call to the other process, much like a sub call would be, mm-hmm. like to a web service, mm-hmm. think of it that way. But this is a C# to C++ interop call. All the plumbing's done for you. So let's look at the other side. And so this is all the DirectX code, and there's lots of it. I'm going to stuff around with the begin draw function. And you can, I'm just going to jump right down the bottom here because I know it's kind of easy to see. So there's all this stuff happening, and as we go down, we've got a local variable called beginDrawHR, which is an H result, and it's checking, and this is success, and then it goes, well, if the device is removed, or there was an error on the device, or caused by a reset, recreate the device and start the draw again. Otherwise, if it's some error code that we haven't expected, throw it. And so this is kind of like the succeeded keyword I was talking about in C++. This has an explicit DirectX code that says if it's in this range, throw it as an exception.
Yeah.
And what's going to throw is the H result. So when it leaves C++, it's just a intrinsic H result throw. When it arrives in the C#, well, it has to get turned into a CLR exception type. All right. So what I'm going to do is I know that if I get rid of this scenario, and so it doesn't have explicit handling anymore for the device destroying.
Mm-hmm.
And if I run this, and all I have to do is let it rotate. Now, if I tab back, what we're going to see, hopefully, within 5 seconds, is it's going to suspend. Come on. It didn't crash. Why didn't you crash?
It's too robust. There it goes. Oh, you got it.
So what happens is, you know, that stop your rendering subsystem comes in.
Yeah.
It causes one of those errors, and we didn't handle it. right? Now, when you're in the debugger, it's fantastic. You actually have been brought back to the begin draw function. So it was within the throw happened in the C++ code, and this is where we've received it, right? So there's kind of a limit of what you're debugging here. You're debugging the C# program. You're not really debugging, the way it manifested itself wasn't over there, it was over here.
Yeah.
So that's, and we didn't catch it. Let's try to make this a little bit more hardened against that breakpoint. So obviously we want to catch the exception. So what I've written is some code, because it's a little bit more to write than I want to write on air. So I'm just going to grab this code, and I'm going to replace this code. Replace this code. And what I've done is I've put a try catch around the code. I'm going to catch it as a system.exception right now, because I'm not quite sure what exception type is being thrown. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to just put it on the screen. So this example actually hasn't got any space where I can really put anything. So I'm just going to change the XAML a bit. So I'm going to add another row to the definition, and then I'm going to put in a text block. And we'll give it a name. So the code can modify it. And then we want to just set the grid correctly. So it's on row 2? No, row 1. All right. Oh, and actually, I missed the other one. I need to change. Oh, yeah, grid row 2. Yeah, I've already been playing with this. So let's run that. So same example, errors running fine. And then what's going to happen is over here, the exception is going to get caught, and then we're actually going to update the text on the screen.
Okay.
So if we go back, this is actually going to, actually we can put a breakpoint on that. And hopefully, come on. All right. This has been a little bit too stable. So what I'm going to do is...
Darn those stable apps.
Yeah. I'm just going to choose an error code no matter what. So 8 at the front means it's an error. And I happen to know that 4 Fs on the end is catastrophic failure.
Yeah.
So let's use a catastrophic failure event. And here's our error text. And so if we go back here, you can see it caught a system.exception, a catastrophic failure. But you notice that it's a system.exception. So this code here, esgettype.toString, actually asks the class, even though I'm cast you as an exception right now, what type are you? Sometimes you get system.exception. Now, based on the way that the error has propagated, sometimes you get com interrupt exception, sometimes you don't, right? And it's actually what I actually have the XML example from last week for the same thing. I modified the code. Last week, this just had hard-coded text in it. Same code, same output. I'm going to run this guy. And you'll see that this guy also gets thrown as a system.exception. So even though under the covers it was an XML exception, sometimes it's cast to the fundamental type. I'm not exactly sure why, but I think it's something to do with the projection layer. As you go through, there's a limit of how much you can reconstitute as reality. And so when you're writing your code, you need to be wary of that. So you know that from the MSDN docs it says it's going to throw an XML exception, or if it's for the case of the original scenario with this DirectX stuff, it's going to throw a com interrupt exception.
Mm-hmm.
Also be aware that sometimes it will be cast down to a system.exception, which is exactly why I think system.exception is such a high number.
Yeah.
right? So even though under the covers there actually is a COM exception or an XML exception or an HTTP exception, sometimes it can get cast down. I'm not sure why, and I'll look into it if people really want me to. But just be aware of that. So the next thing you can do is, let's not catch this guy. And let's get a dump file. And it's going to be the last thing we're going to do today. Get rid of all these braces. All right. So this is going to have that catastrophic failure fire. Why is it failing? Oh, I missed the slash. That would do it, wouldn't it? So this is built, and then if I do this, it's just going to crash, break in. So let's stop that debugging. And then we're going to catch this as a thing so that you can draw rectangles fine. And then 3D, it's all frozen. Hard drive's going flat chat. And we have a dump file in the background. So this is where interrupt really, really is bad, because there's very little you can do in a dump file, even with internal Microsoft knowledge in this scenario. So this is the exception context record. And the magic that we have to do is ddpoi. DD is the size of an H result. And there is your catastrophic failure that I coded into the C code, right? Yeah. So if we look at the stack we're on, none of this is helping you. This is just the GUI thread reporting on the asynchronous call that the XAML made way over there to do the DirectX rendering. So this has got nothing to do with neither the function that's the C# function nor the C++ function. And unlike previous weeks where you could do sos.printException, mm-hmm. you actually don't get one this time, because even if you catch it and rethrow it, which is the example code I have here, here where I catch it, make a new object, say, I know this is the interop thing, let's move it up to interop, and then pass in, I happened in this place, and then I'm gonna pass in this one as an inner exception. Even if you throw that, you'll still end up with the fundamental one underneath. And you still won't have a SOS accessible exception. And it's because the runtime's exception handling knows that this was originally a C exception and will always bring it down to its C exception at the end, from end to end. It doesn't care whether you went via CLR to achieve the goal. Mm-hmm. Fundamentally, it started as a C exception, and so it's going to end as a C exception. And so you get a very bad debugging experience, unfortunately. So if you happen to get this type of issue, email dfragtools and I'll see if I can help you behind the scenes with a lot more Microsoft internal magic.
Cool.
But it's unfortunately a very bad situation. All I can suggest to you is if you are seeing error codes that suggest origination from C++ code,
yeah.
and you have interop in your project, I suggest that you you catch things, consume them. So if I just let this run, right? This is you've caught it and logged it on the screen, or maybe in a log file, mm-hmm. There's no reason why you couldn't do a web call to yourself and saying, by the way, I'm seeing this error in my code,
yeah.
right? And I'm sure there's code projects out there that show you how to do that. Be pessimistic about your code, and then react accordingly. Swallow up the exception, which means that when I do this and get rid of the breakpoint, all you do is get nice, clean redraw on screen. Unless you don't get a crash.
Yeah.
Sure, it's probably not a great experience. So why did I choose this DirectX example? Well, lots of, if you buy a new machine with Windows 8 on it, it's going to be fine. But if you have an old machine, right, you go, and classic example is I have, those Dell Duos with the old screen that flips,
yeah.
the netbooks?
Yep.
I have one of those. Well, the DirectX on it is really old, as in the GPU.
Yeah.
It is missing fundamental DirectX features that are required by a lot of games mm-hmm. that are just considered to be standard on Windows 8 as a logo point of view.
Yeah.
So the GPU is not Windows 8 logo compliant. Well, I know there's lots of games that if I happen to run it on that PC, they just crash. And they crash because they do a DirectX call, and then I end up with an interop exception on that thing. So now, the market for upgraded PCs from particularly older things, it's a very small market. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever percent, tiny. But it happens, right?
Yeah.
And that's what this type of stuff is. So if you have a DirectX application, and these things usually happen quite close to the start, like when you're starting to boot the program up,
mm-hmm.
you be a bit more pessimistic and go, hey, sorry, pop up a dialogue saying, your DirectX is too old, rather than crashing and burning.
Yeah, it might get you out of having to do the tech support behind that.
Exactly. Oh, and also, all you'll get is, I installed the program, and then people on the ratings say, it crashes on launch. That's not helping anybody.
Yeah.
It's not helping yourself. It's not helping the ecosystem. And so be a bit more pessimistic. If you know, particularly if you're a DirectX guy, you know what you're doing, right? You're a good programmer if you're a DirectX programmer.
Mm-hmm.
Put a simple try-catch around it.
Yeah.
Right? And just put, even if it's a toast or something simple like that, just bring up a little dialogue and say, sorry, I can't handle it.
Yeah.
And that's it for this week.
Cool. If you have questions, write us at defragtools@microsoft.com, and we'll see you next week.
Have a good holidays.